Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Another weekend, another UFC event going down tomorrow night in Las Vegas, the final event in an absolutely crazy month of August for the promotion. It'll be headlined by a big one at 205 pounds. And with that, we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 8 preview show on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Hack, being joined by the rest of the tripod, if you will, Jose Youngs and Alex K. Lee. Jose, let's begin with you. This main event fight between Anthony Smith and Alexander Rakic, 3 rounds, 5 rounds, doesn't really matter. It's a very fascinating matchup, and the stakes have gotten exponentially higher now that until September 26th, there is no UFC light heavyweight champion. So in your eyes, how much more interesting does it make this fight at 205 pounds tomorrow night at the Apex now that John Jones no longer holds the title?
Well, it's super interesting because not only has John Jones vacated his title, Alexander Gustin's back. He's no longer in the division. There's no threat of Daniel Cormier dropping back down and getting another title shot out of nowhere. So this fight was already awesome to begin with, especially just the fact that I love this fight as a martial arts competition without the stakes of a title or anything like that. But two guys the stakes were basically they're trying to get back in the win column. And the light heavyweight division, as Dean Thomas said on the A side, is not the deepest division in the UFC. So two wins in a row will put you in title contention. But now that there is no champion, and Anthony Smith is no longer 0-1 against the current champion, Alexander Rakic is going to try to prove that he is the future of the division. Then we have Jiří Prochazka coming in. We got Thiago Santos, Glover Teixeira fighting coming up. So the winner of this isn't going to get a title shot, but they're going to be right there. And it's no John Jones at 205 pound division is something that we haven't talked about in what, almost 10 years. It's I don't know what to say because this is uncharted water after so long.
Okay. Let's look at Anthony Smith. It's his sixth consecutive main event, and he's about to compete in his 49th professional fight. The trajectory of this man's career over the last 26 months or so has just been unbelievable. Like, I would love to see a 30 for 30 someday on Anthony Smith's career at some point, because the story is just incredible to see, you know, from the first time I've ever spoken to him to where he's at now. It's just mind-boggling. But he fought his way to a title shot. He lost to John Jones, finishes Alexander Gustafsson, and then he gets finished by Glover Teixeira in his last fight in May. And it was one of those fights that was met with a lot of controversy because it wasn't stopped by the referee, it wasn't stopped by his team. But that's the way that Anthony Smith wanted it, because that's who he is. Now he takes on a very dangerous guy in Alexander Rakic, who has looked really good throughout his career, especially in the UFC. What are you going to be looking for from Anthony Smith tomorrow night as he looks to get back on track and take that step closer to maybe getting back into that title discussion very soon?
You want to see that he has that same aggression, you know, that he always plans to come out with. Like, he's a finisher. I mean, we talk about a guy again, you said almost fight number 49. He's finished 30 of his opponents. He's been finished 13 times. So he's only gone to a decision about I think I'm looking at four or five times. And so that's pretty crazy. I mean, that's the kind of thing, the attitude that he said he regretted, you know, not bringing into the John Jones fight when they fought at UFC 235. That was one of his big regrets after, was what if I had just, you know, gone balls to the wall and gone all out for the finish. And again, I personally am someone who didn't blame him for that. I think it's a lot easier to say you're going to do that until you're actually in the cage with someone like John Jones. And then there's just a million things going on that, you know, again, us on the outside, we can't even imagine. So I never blamed him for whatever, being somewhat passive, maybe not putting on the most exciting fight against John Jones. But I mean, against Gustafsson, he was right back at it. It was a great fight. The share was very lopsided, unfortunately, not in his favor. So we do want to see which, like you said, kind of which Anthony Smith is going to come out. That is the question. I do think we're going to see aggressive. I don't think he has any fear, really, of anyone, but definitely not of Alexander Rakic. He's kind of said in interviews this week that he didn't really study him or something to that effect. I don't know if he's exaggerating that, but I'm sure he respects how deadly Rakic is, but the experience level is so different. I think he sees this as an up and comer that he is going to, that he's gonna be the one again finishing the fight. I don't think he's too worried about getting knocked out, but I mean, Rakic is, well, I'm sure we'll talk about it more. Rakic is a real talent.
For sure, Jose, because Rakic has won, he had won 12 straight fights. His only loss prior to his most recent appearance was in his professional debut. Mm-hmm. Gets to the UFC, wins his first four fights, finished two straight before the Volkan Ozdemir fight. I believe that was the Busan card in December. Loses a split decision, a decision that many people thought Rakic actually won. I was looking at MMA decisions before he got on. Yeah. All but one media member scored it for Alexander Rakic, and that one media member was our good friend Pete Carroll, who scored it for Volkan Ozdemir. But now Rakic gets the opportunity to fight Anthony Smith, another former title challenger. And Rakic is around a minus 300 favorite to win this fight tomorrow night. Kind of like a two-part question here. One, do you agree with the odds makers here? And two, what can we expect from a guy who wants to prove that not only can he beat Anthony Smith, but he's one of the very best that this division has to offer that not a lot of people are talking about?
Well, actually, I even think you left out that the majority of media members scored it for Rakic, but I think there were even like one or two 30-27s in there. So some people even had him winning all three rounds, and he still lost a split decision. So not the quote robbery of the year. So, AK Lee, if you're looking for a robbery review, that's a good one right there for an upcoming series. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the odds based on what we know about Anthony Smith. I just think they're basing off of his last performance, where it was so one-sided, where Glover Teixeira is literally apologizing in the middle of the fight for beating up Anthony Smith. His teeth are falling out. There's all that controversy of his corner, should his corner have thrown in the towel or not. So we all know Anthony Smith is one of the gamest fighters in the division, or in the whole UFC. He's never won to go out there and just get demolished and looks like he doesn't belong. So I think the odds makers are just basing on, A, Alexander Rakic most likely won his last fight. Before that, he basically decapitated Jimmy Manoa and sent him into retirement. Anthony Smith has then had, the John Jones lackluster loss, just tears through Alexander Gustafsson, and then gets beat the soul beaten out of him by Glover Teixeira. So it's a lot of up and down with Anthony Smith, rather than Rakic has looked great, and then he should have gotten the decision against Volkan Ozdemir. I actually scored for Rakic too. So I don't agree with the odds, but I get it. I understand where they're coming from, and Rakic, like I said, is just uber violent. Like, when he wins, he's either just dominating the decision or he's putting you to sleep. I even think he had a submission win somewhere in there. Like, that Jimmy Manoa knockout was terrifying. If I'm not mistaken, that was Jimmy Manoa's last fight. Like, he got sent off into retirement after that. And when Pete Carroll was here, he was interviewing Rakic and Jimmy Manoa, and he kept saying, like, people in the UK and Europe, this is the fight they have circled on that card. I think that was the Sweden card, 2000, same card as Anthony Smith, Gustafsson, if I remember correctly. For people in Europe, they circled Manoa Rakic for a violent finish, and my God, did Rakic deliver! So I'm curious how he bounces back after a loss, like you said, it's been so long, and I think we're seeing fighters like Sugar Sean get his first loss, and we see how he reacts. But then you see the flip side, Darren Till gets his first loss, and see how he reacts. So I'm very curious how a young, up-and-coming, hungry prospect in the light heavyweight division recovers from not just a loss, a controversial loss.
It's kind of like Marlon Vera heading into the O'Malley fight, because most people thought he beat Song Yadong.
Yeah, and that's an amazing comparison. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, and Marlon even told me, like, heading into that fight, he's like, in my mind, I won 7 in a row. Like, I'm going into this fight on a 7-fight winning streak. So Rakic seems to sort of have that same mentality, but, you know, AK, we talked about the fact that Jones vacated the title. Things are opening up at 205 a little bit. Based on the UFC rankings as they stand right now, and we don't like to fantasy match before these fights happen, but it's kind of interesting. We have the top four guys booked for future fights. Of course, we have the title fight, and then we have Anthony Smith sitting at number 5. Are the stakes for this fight earning a fight with the one Jiří Procházka who sits at number 6? I feel like there's no other thing to do here.
This Jiří Procházka mania really took over. Maybe I didn't watch enough of him before the UFC. I'd certainly saw, I guess, maybe a couple of his fights. But I know our staff is super, super high on Jiří. And that performance against Volkan did nothing to change that. If anything, again, for someone like me who didn't know him as well, that was a real eye-opener. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I get why people are saying this. Yeah, I think that would be that makes a lot of sense for whoever wins this fight to face Jiří. But like I said, the way that the rankings are now and the way how quickly things change, I mean, just winning this fight, it really does kind of put you on a short list to pretend, maybe more so for Rakic than Anthony Smith, but it would put it on a short list for, you know, again, people fall out, negotiations go screwy. So while we can say, you know, they're, maybe they're one fight away, they need to beat Yuri Prochazka, or maybe two fights away, Yuri beat someone else, beat another, like, kind of contender, one of the guys who falls out from one of the, you know, that's at the top four, top five of the rankings. I could also just see, honestly, if Rakic won and played his cards right, and if certain things fell his way, I could just see him getting a title shot against, like, again, whether it be Dominic Reyes or Jan Blachowicz. Jan Blachowicz, right? I think huge stakes on the line on Saturday. Not just staying in the contender thing, but, man, again, you just got to stay on that short list for a title shot should something happen.
Jose, who do you like here? Who's the official pick?
Man. Wow. You're putting me, like, I literally am making my mind up right now. I'm gonna give the slight edge to Anthony Smith. I think we've seen in the past, like, he's had his last bad performance was against John Jones, and then he looked unbelievable against Alexander Gustafsson and just tore through him. And then after that, he had one of the more lopsided losses of his career to Glover Teixeira. So just based on history alone, I'm gonna go with that, because again, that Volkan Ozdemir fight. We can talk about how Rakic is this uber killer and this awesome striker and knockout artist and future of the division, but he got the L, and it wasn't the greatest fight. It was not. Like, it was a classic Volkan Ozdemir fight where it just looked ugly, similar to the Dominic Reyes-Volkan Ozdemir fight. But then you see what Anthony Smith did to Volkan Ozdemir, and I thought that fight was a lot of fun, and Anthony Smith pulled it out. So I'm going to give the very slight edge to Anthony Smith, but if this was five rounds, I would really favor Anthony Smith, but the three rounds makes it that much closer. But I say that with no confidence whatsoever, because if Alexander Rakic goes out there, just throws that haymaker of a high kick and just decapitates Anthony Smith, I wouldn't be surprised either. So three rounds, it's a lot closer to 50-50 for me, but I give the slight edge to Anthony Smith. I just think he's the more complete martial artist, especially on the ground. We haven't really seen Alexander Rakic on the ground. Anthony Smith's out here competing in quintet in December, representing the UFC, if I'm not mistaken, and he himself, I think, is a black belt, and our Lorisenko sings his praises a lot for his ground game. So clear edge to Anthony Smith on the ground. Striking, I think it's Rakic might be more violent. Anthony Smith might be more, what's the word, experienced. As Dean Thomas says, it's not who's the better fighter, it's who makes the least mistakes. And if they do make mistakes, who capitalize it on the most? And I think that's where Anthony Smith pulls it out.
AK, a little preview of the prediction article tomorrow. What do we got here?
I think I'm going to regret this because I'm picking Rakic. I regret it. I say that because Anthony Smith is a good dude. He's a friend of the media. He's certainly a friend of this site. He was definitely someone who, you know, made for a fine A-side live chat guest.
That's right.
During that kind of difficult time post COVID, you were doing A-sides like every friggin' day, it seemed like. So we love Anthony Smith around here. I do think youth will be served. I do think Alexander Rakic, I don't know if he's that much younger. I know Anthony Smith is one of those fighters I always view as old. He's certainly old in fight years. He's only 32. It's not like, you know, right. He's not a geezer by any means. But I do think Rakic, I am leaning towards the younger fighter. I'm very impressed by everything I've seen from him so far. Again, the Ozdemir fight, a little clunky, but a good challenge for him, and the kind of fight that usually elevates someone like in Rakic's position. So I am betting that that tough loss actually rockets him forward, as opposed to, you know, messing with his progression. I think it is only a good thing. I'm going Rakic. I think Rakic's going to get the finish. I actually forgot that the fight was only three rounds. This was supposed to be the Holm Aldana card.
No, I believe this was going to be Zabit Yair.
Really?
Holm Aldana was the Shabazzian Brunson card.
Oh my gosh, I can't keep track of these things. But yeah, three round fight, five round fight for me. It doesn't even make a difference. I think this is ending within the first two rounds, and I think it will be a Rakic knockout win.
I actually agree with Jose here. I think the fact that it is three rounds does Anthony Smith a favor if we're basing it off his last fight. And it's weird for me to say that because the last fight ended sort of brutally for Anthony Smith. But a lot of people forget, like, it was kind of a tale of two fights. Like, the first two rounds, Anthony Smith looked pretty damn good.
He did.
He just kind of got tired. He threw a lot of volume and he just ran out of gas, and Glover Teixeira took over. But Anthony Smith, like, he's such a dog, and he has shown that, you know, even if he gets beat up for two rounds, he has that just weird mindset, just battle through it and get these out of nowhere finishes. Like, he's done a little bit of everything to get these wins. There's obviously a lot of questions here, because that last fight, it's not like it happened like a year ago. It happened 3 months ago when he fought Glover Teixeira. He took a beating in the last 10 minutes plus of that fight.
He's fighting before Glover Teixeira now.
I know, which is crazy, because that fight got booked like, it was like the end of June this fight got booked. So like a month and a half after Anthony Smith lost to Glover Teixeira, this fight was booked, which was just wild to a lot of people.
It's the same thing like when he lost to John Jones. They booked that Gustafsson fight real quick for Sweden. He just said Anthony Smith was like, I should take a vacation, but I just need to get in there and just punch someone. So based on history alone, I have to give the slight edge to Anthony Smith.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm leading with Smith because of the experience. I think the early volume, if he does that again, I think that puts him in a good spot, maybe wins the first two rounds. The ability to take punishment is in his favor, clearly. So I lean Smith here. I see him winning the first two rounds. I see Rakic making things really interesting in round three, but I think Smith has that durability to survive it. But Rakic is a killer. It wouldn't surprise me if we get that violent knockout from his side. But
let's also not forget that Anthony Smith is not coming off of beating up a home invader like the week before during this fight. So his mind is probably a lot more focused on a fight rather than protecting his family and you know, fighting off an assailant in his own home.
Yes, I wasn't laughing at the scenario. I was laughing because that's just a wild thing. But all right. So that's a main event. Co-main event, we get the return of Robbie Lawler after about a year or so on the sidelines. He steps in on relatively short notice, replacing Jeff Neal. Not much. I mean, the short notice isn't as much compared to like a lot of these other guys in this COVID era. I mean, look at Austin Springer taking a fight on like 2 days' notice, but takes on Neal Magny. Jose, Robbie Lawler is back, which is always a nice shot in the arm, but he's coming in loser of three straight and 4 out of 5. His last appearance was that fight with Colby Covington in Newark, where he just got out-volumed and outpaced for 25 minutes, and it was a pretty lopsided win for Colby. Neal Magny, very similar guy. He's got a great gas tank, throws a lot of volume, mixes things up a lot. What are your thoughts on this welterweight co-main event tomorrow night?
I am super curious to see what kind of Robbie Lawler we get, because I really think the last version, like the last terrifying version of Robbie Lawler we got, and I'm not saying like by any means, Robbie Lawler is still a terrifying individual, but that fight against Carlos Condit, neither man has really been the same since after that image of them leaning against the octagon. But like after that, who's he beat? Cowboy Cerrone in a fight that I think did not live up to the hype, UFC 214, and then like what, his knee exploded against RDA. So then he fought RDA for 4 rounds on one leg, and then the Askren fight, let's say it for what it is, controversial ending. He wasn't out. Who knows what would have happened if Herb Dean didn't step in there. And then he lost fair and square to Colby Covington, who is one of the most elite welterweights in the world, regardless of what you think of his personality and his opinion. So I think Neal Magny is amazing. I think he's one of the more exciting fighters on the roster, and I think he's really overlooked on fighters that he's never in a boring fight. Win or lose, it's always an exciting fight. So to me, but the tale of this is what version of Robbie Lawler we're going to get, because I didn't expect, when we lost Neal on Neal, I didn't know who was going to take his place. Robbie Lawler was not even remotely a possibility in my mind. I was like matchmaking Neal Magny with a whole lot of other fighters not named Robbie Lawler, because I thought Robbie Lawler might get that veterans tour where he gets all those super fights and exciting. But Robbie Lawler is down to fight anyone. He hates doing interviews. I think maybe that played a factor into like, hey, if I take this fight on short notice, I don't have to do a lot of media. So maybe that's the case. But 3 rounds definitely favors Robbie Lawler, because he comes in like a bat out of hell every single fight. Neal Magny probably has one of, if not the best cardio in the division. He's super long and rangy. Robbie Lawler's, we're talking about Anthony Smith being this long tenured veteran. It's, to me, it's hard to decide who's had the more crazy career between Robbie Lawler and Anthony Smith. Like 1-2 right there, like make movies about both of them. Robbie Lawler, of course, was former champion of welterweight, so I don't know what to expect, because Robbie Lawler has been such a wild card lately. We know what we're going to get from Neal Magny. I have no idea what we're going to get from Robbie Lawler.
What do you think, AK? And by the way, just to touch on Jose's point with the media, Robbie Lawler at the virtual media day was just fantastic. Just lean back. All you saw was like his nose up, because he was just so relaxed back there. But thoughts on the fight, AK?
Mike, you know I'm the prince of positivity normally, but I think we may have seen the best of Robbie Lawler in Cage. It's such a terrible thing to say. And so again, we always say fans and media should never be the ones to say when a fighter should retire. So I'm definitely not saying that, but I do think we may have seen his best days. I was very excited when he was announced as the replacement. It was the only thing that could console me after we lost Neil on Neil. But like Jose said, out of nowhere, here comes Robbie Lawler, and you're kind of like, maybe I kind of want to see this matchup more. Just because, again, Robbie just has put on such great, great fights throughout his career. And it does seem like a really good matchup on paper, but I think the formula is there of how to beat Lawler at this stage of his career. Again, like you mentioned volume, and that Magny's just the master of volume. And there was a lot of that in the RDA fight. There's a lot of that in the Colby Covington fight. And I just don't know if Lawler can keep that pace anymore. Magny, I think, is just really peaking at the right time. He's such a, I think, an underappreciated talent. He's been in the ranking, either just outside the top 10 or in the top 10 the rankings for a while. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe because he doesn't talk a lot of trash, or he hasn't quite been able to string together that dominant streak. That's like winning two, losing one, winning two, losing one, which doesn't always, you know, it doesn't stick in the fans' minds. This is a huge, huge, huge signature fight for him. I don't know. He didn't get a lot of credit for the Carlos Condit win, but I mean, look, if he beats Lawler, he'll have Hendricks on there. Carlos Condit, Robbie Lawler, in addition to, again, beating fellow up-and-comers who are in the same range as him, Anthony Rocco Martin, Li Jing Liang. So his resume is so complete. You know, I didn't even mention, again, he's had some UFC wins, some of the guys he's beaten. That's just the guys he's beaten in years prior, Hector Lombard. So I like his chances so much. And I don't want to take anything away from his win if he does dominate Lawler. But I do think that maybe the Robbie Lawler that we've grown to love for so long, that Lawler may be gone.
Can Robbie Lawler turn back the clock, Jose? Can you play spoiler here, or are you favoring Neil here?
I mean, I have to favor Neil Magny. This is his third fight in 2020. He's by far one of the more, like, when he's healthy and he doesn't have these weird USADA situations that are keeping out for so long, he'll fight like every other month. Like, I believe he's tied with the record. I can't remember who. Might even be Cowboy. No, it's Roger Huerta. He has like 5 wins in like one calendar year. That was like back in 2014, 2015. And then like after that, just win, 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 loss, win, win. Like AK said, like he fights so often, but when he strings together wins, he always falters. And he falters like pretty spectacularly, like getting TKO'd by Lorenz Larkin, tapped by Maya. And then he got KO'd bad by Santiago Ponzinibbio. A win over Robbie Lawler, like I wasn't even thinking about it until AK said it. Like, that's a win over Lawler. It's one over Condit. It's one over Hendricks. Lombard, like, we've had preview shows in the past where we're talking about Charles Oliveira, like, all of a sudden coming out of nowhere and being a possible future UFC Hall of Famer and racking up all these wins. Neil Magny is, like, in that same boat. Like, he's fought the best of the best at welterweight. He's looked unbelievable. Robbie Lawler is such a wild card, so I just, in my mind, I have to pick the consistent fighter right now, and that is Neil Magny to go 3-0 in 2020. Plus, that Li Jing Liang match fight was like a perfect game. That was the equivalent of a perfect game in baseball. Like that, like when the leads tried to run away and Neil Magny just did like a wraparound like hook to the face, and that like if he punched like the front of Li Jingliang's face from behind him. Like, it was such an impressive display of skill. And then the Anthony Rocco Martin fight was very competitive. I just think AK said it best. Neil Magny's peaking at the best time of his career right now. I favor Neil Magny.
Yeah, that's why, in a weird way, that the Rocco Martin fight is what makes Robbie a little more live here, because that was such a hard-fought battle. That was a war between those two guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people actually scored that fight for Rocco Martin. So, you know, how could he bounce back so quickly after a war like that against a really fresh guy like Robbie Lawler, who hasn't competed in over a year? That makes things a little interesting. I am leaning towards Neil Magny, but I am excited to see what Robbie Lawler can bring to the table tomorrow night. We did have a couple of hiccups on the scale earlier. Hannah Cyphers, the most active fighter to this point in 2020, about to make her fourth appearance of the year. She misses weight. She forfeits 20% of her purse to Mallory Martin. Newcomer Austin Springer also missed, which is understandable since he got this fight like 2 days ago. He forfeits 30% of his purse to Alex Caceres, who deserves it since he's had 3 different opponents this week. Main card rounds out with Ji-Yeon Kim welcoming Alexa Grasso to 125. And then we got Ricardo Lamas versus Bill Algeo with, sorry, AK, Ryan Hall out. And, of course, Magomed Ankalaev taking on Ion Kutalaba in the rematch from that friggin' wild first fight they had. Everyone has that fight circled as fireworks. But Jose, under the radar time, what fight, as you say so eloquently, rules in your mind that not a lot of people are talking about?
Man, well, it was Oscar Sayre versus Giga Chikadze. That fight was, I was like, just inject that fight into my veins. And then when Giga Chikadze fell out, I was like, why? And then Ryan Hall fell out, and then we lost Ayers to beat. I'm like, just cancel the whole card. Cancel baseball, cancel this card. I'm going to stick with my usual narrative, where I'm not circling like fights, I'm circling fighters, and I want to see specifically, like, I want to see how Alexa Grasso looks at 125. Her fight against Carla Esparza in Mexico City was amazing. I think that's really an overlooked fight for like one of the better fights in women's history. I think that was such a fun fight. She came up short. She's never in like that fight against Karolina Kovalkiewicz in Chicago that I was at. That fight was just, they just punched the soul out of each other for 15 minutes. That fight was absolutely, like, the last 45 seconds of that fight was just violence at 115. Caceres, I'm obviously excited on. Poliana Viana versus Emily Whitmire is fun. Emily Whitmire has a chip on her shoulder 24/7. Like, she's just always trying to prove doubters wrong. Poliana Viana, I think a lot of people expected big things from her. She hasn't quite lived up to that. This also a rebooking, if I'm not mistaken. I think Emily Whitmire fell out of their fight in March or February or something after weight cut struggles. Hannah Cyphers unfortunately missed weight. She's one of my favorite fighters to interview, so probably those fighters that I've named. I'm Alexa Grasso at the top of my list, though. A Mexican fighter that needs to prove a lot of naysayers wrong. So yeah, those are all the names I have circled.
AK with Ryan Hall out of the equation.
Why do you gotta keep saying it?
What's your pick? What's your under the radar pick?
Well, by the way, first of all, respect to Bill Algio, who's a really solid talent. If you'll remember his name, as I just recalled it before we started doing the show, he was the other half of the controversial Brendan Loughnane contender series fight. He was on the losing end. It was a really good fight.
It was an amazing fight.
I remember going into that fight thinking this could be one of those fights where both guys go to decision and both guys get a contract. Somehow neither of them got a contract.
So did Paul Felder and Brandon Fitzgerald. Right? When I interviewed them at the beginning, they say, I don't care who wins. They're both getting contracts.
Yeah, and somehow neither did. So that was kind of messed up. So it's good to see Algio finally getting a shot, I know, under difficult circumstances. But I will say, hey, he has a chance against a lot. We've had some newcomers this year. Surprise. I keep thinking about, like, Daniel Rodriguez and Tim Means, Miguel Baeza and Matt Brown. So these veterans, like Lamas, they're not safe. I mean, Lamas is probably a little bit higher up on the contender charts than the other two names I just mentioned, the other two veterans. But I don't know. I wouldn't pick against him. But if Algio snuck out a win somehow, that somehow wouldn't shock me either. But two fights on the prelims that I'm super excited about. I think Maki Patolo and Impa Kisangane is just going to be again one of those fights, either crazy brawl or a highlight reel knockout for somebody. I don't know. Hopefully I'm not disappointed. Hopefully it's not two guys with power that are kind of, you know, the kind of shaky and too wary of each other's power. But I don't think that's the case. Maki Patolo strikes me as a legitimate psychopath, so I expect him to push the action and either get a knockout or get knocked out himself and shrug his shoulders either way. But the other one that I'm really looking out for, I really like the Sean Brady Christian Aguilera matchup. Aguilera was I was less sure of how his skills would translate into the UFC. I knew he'd be an exciting fighter, so it was great to see him get that win, get an exciting win in his first fight, because he has so many good highlights on the regional scene. But I think Sean Brady is also a very, very legitimate, like, future contender. He looks the part. He's got a well-rounded game. He's got that, you know, he idolizes GSP, which, you know, for Canadian is always something you want to hear. He's trained with, you know, he's got the Eddie Alvarez affiliation. So so those two fights on the prelims, Patolo Kisangane and Brady Aguilera, really, really excited. But top to bottom, this is really, like, a really sneaky, compelling card. Like, I don't know if there's any fight where I'm not at least a little bit intrigued.
Yeah, I think Brady Aguilera is kind of the easy runaway pick here. I mean, it's the first freaking fight of the night, which is a great table setter for the rest of the card. I do agree with Jose. I do have my eye on Emily Whitmire versus Poliana Viana, because both ladies looking to get back on track. Both have shown their abilities in their careers to finish fights very quickly. Viana, as Jose alluded to, has had a very bumpy road losing her last three, so her back is against the wall big time here, and Whitmire just ran into the Amanda Hibas buzzsaw in her last fight, so that one has the makings to be really, really exciting, so I'm going to go with that as my under-the-radar pick, but I am also looking forward to, as AK said, seeing the Octagon debut of Impa Kisangane, who just won a contract on the Contender Series like 2 weeks ago, making a quick turnaround against Maki Patolo, which I'm interested in seeing, because Maki's going to try to bring that dog out of Impa, which we haven't really seen yet. So that should be a lot of fun as well. So, Jose, Final thoughts heading into tomorrow night's festivities.
It's not the great, like AK said, it's not the best card, but there are a lot of sneaky fights that are compelling, have compelling storylines, that are important, not for title contendership, but like people's careers. Because like I think there's a lot of losers on this card that might not be in the UFC in a couple of months. But last week wasn't the most stacked card, and ended up being just fine. And this fight card isn't the most stacked, and it could very well just be one of those fight cards that we talk about like for the next. A lot of the next couple weeks, especially with the light heavyweight main event and all these light heavyweight fights coming up. But nonetheless, tune in. I'm sure we're going to go to Fight Island in like a month. So take these U.S.-based time zone fights when you can.
Yes. AK, the Prince of Positivity. Preach, my man.
The Prince of Positivity is hoping for a little bit of weirdness. I'm hoping there's some weirdness. I think one of the fights we didn't mention, Alessio Di Chirico and Zach Cummings, classic middleweight encounter. Hopefully something bizarre happens there. But more so, the first fight of the main card, the Magomed Ankalaev Yuan Kutalaba rematch. I was on a SureDog show recently, and one of the kind of questions I was just throwing out there was, I think it was on SureDog, or maybe it was Between the Links, I don't remember. I blocked out the Between the Links beatings I've taken, so if this happened on Between the Links, I apologize. Those were traumatic, and I've talked to my psychologist, and he told me just not to think about it. So the question was raised of, is Ankalaev Kutalaba, this rematch, is it like more compelling than the Cormier Miocic trilogy bout somehow? It was, if anyone forgets, it was supposed to be on that card, and then Kutalaba did test positive for COVID-19. It was pushed back. So obviously I said no, but I understand like people kind of, it's a grudge match after the way their last fight ended with the kind of the was he actually rocked? Was he faking it? So I guess people are expecting that to culminate in some sort of bizarre heated fight on Saturday, and I'm all for it. I think it's certainly possible that we see more weirdness, and if so, bring it on. I'm very, very excited for it.
I just want to see what Kutalaba does when he gets into the octagon. Like if Ankalaev comes out first and he stands there and Kutalaba comes in, will he get in his face like he did the last time? I've never seen anything like that in the UFC before, so I'm really looking forward to seeing how
part two plays out. He did a weird thing at the face-offs today, too, at the Friday's face-offs. He was trying to like look taller than Ankalaev. It was weird. He was like kind of pushing, like, I'm taller than you. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting mind game thing to do. But yeah, that was like the most eventful thing that happened at the Friday's face-offs.
Watch that fight just be a bunch of takedowns, and there'll be like 12 total strikes thrown through 15 minutes. Could be. You never know. But listen, as we learned last week, never ever judge a book or its card solely by its cover, because last weekend was outrageous, and this one has all the pieces, all the recipe to be as well. So stick with us on MMAfighting.com to enjoy the hostilities and the fisticuffs as we wrap up another preview show here on the site. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. For Jose Youngs, for the Prince of Positivity himself, Alex Kaley, I am Mike Heck. We will see you tomorrow night.